What are we starting with this week?
Would it be a YouTube comment by any chance?
What champion is a YouTube comment? Well done.
It absolutely is. He didn't tell me that off screen, by the way.
This YouTube comment is from Luke Cutforth, and it's on our... Luke Cutforth, a longtime fan. It says, bear. That's all. Thank you, Luke Cutforth.
That's all you need to know.
So the question for this week is, do you have facial hair, or do you want it, or do you prefer people that have it? Let us know the answers to all of those questions in the YouTube comments. And if you're not watching on YouTube, watch on YouTube. I don't know why I'm staring at the camera very angrily, because if you're seeing this, you are watching on YouTube. But if you're listening, go to YouTube and answer. Also, you can join our Discord.
I haven't got a choice. It's on my face. Can't get rid of it.
Let's start the show.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp, and not Luke Cutforth, Ellie Spagario.
What?
Wow! What?
Hello, Ellie.
Hello. I'm so glad to join in an episode about beards and all of the expertise that I can offer.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh, I don't know what the episode's about yet.
To get Ellie on, I had to tell Ellie what the episode was about.
Oh, you broke the format.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. That's really sad. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. That's fine.
We'll never fix it ever again. It's broken forever now.
The format's a fraud anyway.
This week we're talking about fuzzy faces and jabs at jaws.
Would it be beards by any chance?
Yeah, beards. Yeah. Usually there's a beards.
Like there's a guessing game, but no, this week.
It's beards. We're talking about beards. Yeah.
Yeah.
First, though, shall we talk about why our good friend Luke is not here?
Oh, we should address the elephant in the room.
Me?
No, the ginger that's not in the room.
We should address the elephant that's not in the room.
No, it's not. It's Ellie. Drop the fan.
We should address the elephant that's not in the room, which is Luke Cutforth.
So why is Luke not here today?
Well, he's done a bit of an oopsie, and he's seriously hurt his leg to the point where he can't walk, so he can't come in to record.
Deary me.
He can't even get up out of bed to get his camera and his microphone to do it remotely, which is something he told me. That's not me.
No, it's true. That's what he said to me as well. Yeah,
he said that. So
that's such a big thing.
But luckily we have Ellie here with us, who in many ways is much better than Luke. No, don't say Luke. Don't listen to this. Luke, you're stop listening. Stop listening a few seconds ago.
Listen.
So why don't we start?
It might be useful to have a non-beard haver on
the
show.
Well, that's true. I mean,
non-facial hair.
We've got someone that can grow facial hair, someone that pretends to be able to grow facial hair, and someone that can't grow facial hair.
I want to. I just grow it anyway.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Do you want to grow facial hair?
Well, I mean, I've always thought it was something interesting. Like, you know, a beard looks interesting on people's face. I think
it does.
It does give people an edge. It makes you perceive people differently when they've got beards.
I would definitely perceive you differently with a beard.
Oh, well, yeah, I bet you would.
Well, what kind of beard would you have? Like a big bushy beard or a...
No, like one of the hipster ones. The sort of like quite nice and trim, but also like a bit long, so they make you look a bit like scruffy around the edges. And
I think that'd sit you. Like,
you're not meant to care, but you actually do.
Can someone photoshop me with a beard and then I can have a look.
Pose for the camera. Someone please Photoshop a beard on.
That's the thumbnail.
Because I'm not going to do
That's one. You're doing it 100% for the thumbnail.
Okay, fine. I have to do it. Making me do work.
At least I'll finally know how
you
it would look
like.
Send
it to me and I'll
wait,
do it.
No, FaceApp has it. I'll just post it. That's fine.
No, I did that and I look like Timothy Chalamet for some reason.
Oh.
Special guest Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Dune was really good.
Okay, let's start the show. You know, we get so many comments from people. Well, we get some reviews from people saying, "Oh, this podcast sucks. They ramble too much." And whenever we get a negative review like that, yes, you are 100% correct. But I think that's what sets us apart.
Well, yeah. If you don't want it, don't come here.
Yeah, go away.
That's the whole point of the podcast. Go away.
Go listen to a dry science podcast instead of this wet, fun one.
And yes, the way quantum physics works is lots of like nasally voices. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is a beard?
A thing that grows on your face. It's made of hair and it looks pretty cool.
It's also something you use when you are gay and can't come out of the closet and you pretend to have a girlfriend.
So, beard is, and this is from Britannica, which, you know, not very forward-thinking are Britannica here. It says, beard, hair grown upon a man's chin and cheeks.
Oh.
Not true. A beard can be grown upon anyone's cheeks and chin. right?
It's impossible for anyone for Butterman.
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 So, yeah, hair that grows on your cheeks and chin, it's a beard. If it grows on the sort of upper lip, that's a mustache. But, you know, the whole thing together could be considered a beard as well. Basically, hair that grows on that sort of jaw region of your face. And beards have been throughout history. You know, they've been in many places throughout history. They could be a religious thing. For example, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, and Christians, they can all have religious sort of beliefs around beards. Or rather, you know, religious beliefs that are related to beards in some way. Yeah. And Egyptians, they, according to Britannica again, they frizzed, they dyed, or hennaed, or sometimes braided their beards. And in ancient Greece, the beard was full enough to be curled. And in Rome, it was trimmed. They used razors back in Rome as well.
I never considered that you could henna hair.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either.
No, I actually had to check it out. I was like, does it mean henna? Does it henna?
Yeah.
And apparently it does, yeah.
I guess it turns out relatively reddish because henna's got like a red tint to it normally. Yeah,
it's like a reddish brown.
Like a dye.
So it comes like a gingerish sort of beard.
Yeah.
I wonder why they would want to dye it though. Because normally beard is relatively light dark. It's like there's a lot of like blonde beard, especially I guess in like the northern countries. Mm. But I wonder why someone with a really dark beard, like, I don't know, an Egyptian, would want to get a sort of like a reddish tint.
I don't know. Just for looks, really, I guess. Yeah. Maybe it's a religious thing. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe.
I've used henna to give myself freckles. Why would I want freckles? Just like them.
Just cause.
Just cause. Just like them.
Looks.
Looks fun.
Looks.
Or maybe they're religious looks freckles. Good. Who knows?
Religious freckles.
Yeah.
We'll hail the freckles.
Maybe he had freckles. Probably not.
So why do you think people grow beards? Why, well, as a, not for, like, you know, to look good or whatever, but why do you think beards grow?
Well, testosterone, isn't it?
Okay, maybe I should rephrase my question. Why evolutionarily do you think beards exist?
There we go. To catch your leftover dinner, and then you can have seconds.
That's one.
That was Ellie.
That's one thought. Ellie, why do you think beards
please
exist?
Give a sensible answer.
I mean, the first answer that comes to my mind is probably that it's basically a sign of when you grow out of being a child, and therefore, especially men, it's probably a way of showing that you're now in an age where you can work, you're now in an age where you can get a woman, you know, it's just like a passage of like, once you start growing facial hair, you are becoming an adult. Therefore, I think a big beard was a sign of like a manlyhood.
So that is a very good observation. The further question I want to ask is, why is it generally only men that are able to grow beards? Why is it a sexually dimorphic sort of thing? Why is it that generally females don't grow beards, but males do grow beards? Like as an evolution thing, right? So for example, what I'm kind of asking what I'm trying to get you to think about is, why is it that males generally evolved to be able to grow facial hair, but females didn't?
I never thought about it, actually.
I genuinely can't think of a reason.
Right?
I'm trying to think of, like, obviously apes and everything, but there's no specific reason why women... Maybe women have always been, like... Is it true that in apes maybe, like, female have less hair?
Apparently we're much more sexually dimorphic than apes, and they tend to have largely the same sort of amount of hair on their faces as, you know, each other, regardless of sex.
Huh.
Because it's not, like, normally, like, when you have an area that's got, like, more hair or something like that, it makes me think of, oh, you're protecting something. At the same time, not necessarily, because, like, why have you got hair under your armpit? Why have you got, like, specific pubic hair and stuff like that?
Is it really basic? Is it for, like, warmth or something? Were males just, like, more prone to the elements? Yeah, prone to the elements. I don't know.
This is interesting. So you're going through a lot of stuff. We'll get to it. That's kind of the topic of today's sort of paper. So what we're doing today is we're going over a specific paper, and we'll get to what they think in a bit. But first, I'm just going to give you an overview on why generally we think men evolved to have beards, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at it, males and females of other primates, because, you know, we're all primates. Everyone listening, I assume, would be a primate, unless you're some abomination freak of nature.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
you know, or a talking dog or whatever.
Wait, yeah, place your bets. What are you? I mean, get a DNA test.
And if you're a talking dog, please do get in contact because we'd love to have you on the show.
I was going to say, yeah, freak of nature you are.
Whoa, well, that is not a good way to get that talking dog on the show.
In a good way.
Talking dog, please come onto the show and debate your existence with Jam, please. That is the podcast we're turning into.
You are a freak of nature. I will stand by that.
So yeah, as I was saying, we're all primates, and males and females of most other primates aren't hugely sexually dimorphic. Obviously, there's a few examples that sort of this sort of exception there, but generally, when it comes to hair, at least, they're pretty much similar. And you know, usually when we see differences between males and females, it comes down to sexual selection, right? So if you know I've got a difference between a male and a female, it's because whatever sex is selecting the other sex, you know, to mate with. Mm-hmm. That is something that they find attractive, generally, right? So if you look at birds, a lot of the times the males have very colorful patterns and the females are boring as hell.
Of course.
Because the females don't need to put any energy into a very waste. So for a peacock, for example, right?
Yeah. Ducks.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so ducks. So let's use both of these examples. Like peacocks and ducks, the males of the species need to put a lot of energy into looking all pretty and nice for the females to be like, oh, this is a very healthy duck. This is a very sexy duck. I'm going to have this duck's babies. Or I'm going to have this peacock's babies, right? But the female ducks and the peafowl, they don't need to put the energy into that because the males aren't choosing them. Mm. The males will go for whatever. Like, you could be gray and boring. The males will just take what they get.
Yeah, they're desperate.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. So when it comes to different colorations, generally it's down to sexual selection. And sexual selection and the sort of different colorations that you get, often that is an indicator of health. Obviously, if you are able to shunt a bunch of energy into, you know, just wasteful sort of coloration, it means that you're probably quite healthy, right? Mm. You're healthy and you're able to waste that energy. And if you're not able to, so this is the thing, right? If you're not able to, sort of put a lot of energy into that, it means that you're probably not very successful as an organism, right? As an individual organism, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you've got a peacock who has kind of messed up tail feathers and doesn't look as good as other peacocks. Yeah. It's probably the case that that peacock either is malnourished in some way or has some kind of genetic defect that is affecting its tail feathers, or it's just not able to, you know, it isn't in any other way able to maintain that sort of plumage, right?
And is it representative? Like, in terms of, is it true that if someone can't grow a beard, there's some sort of like less of a...
So this isn't in reference to beards. This is just generally in reference to sexual dimorphism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like those sort of differences between males and females. Beards are a little bit more complicated. So that is generally what happens when it comes to sort of differences between sexes. But beards, they don't really, you know, I mean, they don't really show that. It doesn't necessarily correlate hugely with your sort of nourishment. It's just hair, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Same thing as on your head.
Do we know why some people can't?
Why some people can't grow beards?
Yeah.
It's just differences in sort of genetics, really, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, and the growth of beards, it's very there's a lot of things that go into it, right? So there's that whole thing about testosterone. Testosterone levels, if you got high testosterone levels, that doesn't necessarily correlate with being able to grow a beard, right? You can have high testosterone levels and still not grow a very full beard. Yeah. There are a lot of different factors that come into it.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, right? And I say this often, but this is the thing. People talk about soy boy beta cucks, you know?
Yes.
You know soy boy beta cucks. You know what I mean when I say soy boy?
Yes.
I know what a soy boy is. I don't know what a soy boy beta cucks.
Soy boy is, how would you describe it? It's such an internet thing, isn't it?
It is a very
A boy
thing.
Who eats soybeans. And soy contains estrogen?
Estrogen, yeah.
Phytoestrogen, which makes you womanly, allegedly. Beta just means you are subservient to alpha males. You are like a not as good male. And then a cuck is someone whose wife or girlfriend likes to go off and sleep with other men.
Mm-hmm. That's a very specific word.
Because
okay.
you are inferior.
Yeah. I think about cuckoldry is part of that is enjoying it, right?
It can be.
Can it be? Yeah.
It can be. If it's like a in like a kink scenario, yeah, it would be.
Dearie me. Okay, so now that we've broken down Soy Boy Beta Cup.
It's also an insult. Yeah.
Let's put it all back together.
So I've broken that down for you.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. Good job.
Yeah. New word of the day.
My contribution.
It's used as an insult online, basically to say...
You're not manly enough.
Yeah, a weakly unmanly inferior male.
Yeah.
That is a good summary. Not manly enough. There you go.
But ultimately, when we look at this, we build it back up. None of these things really indicate manhood, specifically being a soy boy. All of the boys on this podcast are vegan and eat some level of soy. But soy doesn't really affect your testosterone levels. And even if it did, your testosterone levels, having high testosterone levels, it doesn't necessarily correlate with being super masculine, right? I mean, obviously it can, but like the personal hormone levels fluctuate quite a bit. And what am I trying to say? Personal hormone levels, like if you... sort of measure between people, one person could have higher testosterone than another, and you could still see the person with lower testosterone being more typically masculine, right? Because it's a little bit more complicated than just more testosterone means more masculinity, right?
Mostly with your DNA in general, right?
Yeah, well, there's obviously as well your body's sort of sensitivity to those hormones, and if your body isn't as sensitive to those hormones, then you won't have as much. It's complicated, basically, and we're not getting into that today.
Wow, who would have thought?
Right, yeah. Biology?
Wow. Complicated? No.
So you're basically saying, well, firstly, we are different from ducks. It's very sad. And secondly, then there's a different reason for which, you know, men grow a beard in human world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the thing is, I'll give this away. We're not totally sure why men grow beards. So all of the stuff I'm going to be saying until we get to the study, it's mostly... What do we think? Maybe. This is a hypothesis. This is an idea, a theory.
Yeah.
And
so is this a study on why we grow beards?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an idea. Why evolutionarily males tend to grow facial hair, but females don't.
Okay.
So just to run through some other ideas for why we grow beards. Some people think that it's to do with sort of that sort of attractiveness thing. Like, you know, a man that can grow a beard is more likely to attract a mate. Generally not true. Apparently women don't like beards on men all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And other people have thought that, oh, maybe it's to display to other men that you're more masculine. Because, you know, having a beard and a deep voice and all these things, you're perceived as being more masculine, dominant, all of that, despite, like...
A beard makes you almost look a bit bigger and, like, a bit more, I don't know, chiseled.
There is that as well. Yeah. So there's a theory that that having a beard makes your face look larger and kind of...
if it's a long beard, it elongates your face.
I mean, which is crazy. I mean, you see Darwin's beard?
Yeah.
Very long beard. Yeah. But apparently there's the idea that a beard makes your face look bigger and therefore more sort of intimidating and more masculine.
Dumbledore, alpha male.
I think there's all the conception that we have in general, just that men with beard are manlier. Mm-hmm. Therefore, for a woman who's theoretically looking for the strongest male, the one that shows the most sort of like, manly attribute is the most attractive to her. So that's probably a reason as well why it's trying to attract a mate. It's like a way of showing your, as you said before, like health and manliness and all of that.
Exactly. So those are some ideas, but we haven't really proven those. You know, this is one of those things. A why is a really difficult thing to prove. We've spoken about this all the time.
Yeah.
In science, when you're asking a why question, specifically when it comes to evolution, it is tough because evolution doesn't necessarily do why. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So evolution is this thing. Evolution is obviously a process by which species, I don't want to say evolve, but by which species sort of differentiate into different species due to sort of, you know, competition and...
they pass on their strongest genes.
Yeah, well, yeah. And this is the thing. Every way that you speak about evolution is kind of flawed because you're not wrong when you say they pass on their strongest genes in sort of what you mean, but the idea of it being the strongest gene is a little bit flawed because it's not the strongest. It's what works.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that I find really difficult to explain about evolution, because the way that evolution works is it's not passing on the absolute best thing for the situation. Like the human eye is not, the human eye is great, really cool, awesome.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks at its job.
Yeah,
you know, like you could sit down and make a better eye, but that's not how evolution works. Evolution kind of works with what it's got and just does things. It basically just whatever works just continues to kind of
work. Not necessarily the perfect thing. It's just what's working the best at the moment.
This is the most useful. Kind
of like, okay, so this
could
is
you think of evolution less as like a process, that a thing that's happening, at like evolution's creating things, and more think of it more like evolution's a filter that's like filtering out things that don't work.
So that, yeah, that's kind of
time.
The sort of survival of the fittest idea. I mean, yeah. Evolution is the process. So, I mean, I guess how I would explain it is that it's not what works best. It's not doing the best with what you've got necessarily. Yeah. It's just whatever makes this is a really like sort of simple and silly way to put it. It's whatever makes you not die before you can make more things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, what it is, I think. Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
You don't even need to be. It doesn't even need to be the best way to not die before making more things. There are plenty of animals that are just ridiculously annoying.
Circumstantially good enough.
Yeah.
Good enough.
There's a frog that breaks its bone, its finger bones, to use as a weapon if it's in danger. Lizards that will
lose the tail.
Totemize and lose their tail if they're in danger. What? Yeah. Because it helps but it helps them survive.
Yeah.
You know.
You're fastest. You don't have a tail anymore, but you're fastest.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just sure. Okay.
There's that wombat that poos like cubes, doesn't it? That poo comes out in cubes.
Yeah.
That's another weird thing. I don't know what purpose that serves.
And this is the thing. People are always looking for, why? And I feel like sometimes with evolution and these specific little things, there's not much of a why. It's more of a just,
it just kind of happened.
It just kind of happened, and it's not taking up enough energy to significantly impact sort of, what's the word? Fitness. Really? Mm-hmm. So, but essentially, if something doesn't impact fitness hugely, it's probably not gonna go. It can stick around for quite a bit, you know, if it doesn't take too much energy and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of the way that evolution works, right? If we're talking about why did this evolve, we got to really move away from the idea of this is the best possible thing, and more this is good enough, or this is just not taking up enough energy to go anywhere. Right? That makes sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's not to say that things don't have a reason to evolve or a use case, right? Because often things that evolve do have some sort of evolutionary use, right? Because as I said, you need to not take up too much energy to like impact fitness, but also on the other side of that, if something does take up energy, it needs to have a reason to basically be there, right?
Yeah.
That improves your ability to pass on genes.
Yeah, probably is the reason that your species carried on over other species that might have died out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it contributes to it as well. Yeah. Or not even your species, literally just, so with even within species, right? This is getting to be a really dense and complicated discussion that I was not expecting. Even within species, if we're looking at different traits between between sort of different members of a species, a more dominant trait gives you an edge over your own species. So we tend to think of evolution as being like between species, but a lot of it is within species as well, right?
Yeah.
So if I have a gene, so for example, let's put it this way: if I've got a gene that means that whatever sort of children I have are going to spontaneously combust before they're able to have kids, my genes are probably not going to be passed on, right?
No, probably not.
Whereas if you don't have those genes, your genes are going to be passed on. So that's that kind of competition in between, sort of within a species. Or for example, if I pass on a gene that makes it harder to, digest. Okay, let's say you pass on a gene that makes it harder to digest lactose, right? You pass on a gene for lactose intolerance, but suddenly there's an increased reliance on milk.
Oh no.
My kids are going to have a better chance at surviving in that world than your kids, because my kids can drink as much milk as they want without completely dying.
And mine get tummy aches and have to go to bed early.
Yeah. And when they go to bed early, they ain't making no kiddies.
No. They don't get to socialize and they die alone. That's it.
Socialize. That's a new word now.
That's a new, there you go.
Hey, Mom, I'm going to go socialize.
Oh, I'm off to go socialize at Katie's house. Sorry.
So you know what I mean there, in that obviously evolution is complex, and if something gives you a slight edge over other members of your species, then you know that can stick around, and then you get like crazy things where you know like horns and tusks can grow bigger and bigger and bigger, antlers can be huge and like take, you know, deer antlers take so much energy to have, it's ridiculous the amount of energy it takes, especially ones that they grow them, then they shed them, and they grow them again next year. Stupid waste.
Yeah.
Stupid waste.
And then they used to fight other males. They used to like prove your dominance and your manliness as a non-man.
Exactly.
But you know what I mean.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so they use them. But obviously having like bigger and better horns means you're better at probably be more better at fighting and be able to take dominate those other males.
Yeah.
And so it's just this like ridiculous arms race of like, okay, well the one that's got the genes for the best sort of like the biggest antlers, they're going to pass them on because they're better at fighting, and it just kind of it can snowball. Basically what I'm saying here is evolution is complex and messy, and there's lots of different reasons that something can stick around. And when we ask why questions in science, often it's not necessarily the most useful question to answer. Mm-hmm. Not the most useful question to ask, or even really the easiest question to answer. Why questions, I think, are super difficult in science, right? Mm-hmm. A what question is usually straightforward. A how question is usually like maybe a little bit more complex. And a why question, dear God, that is...
Because
there's so much inference there.
You know? You have to infer a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he enters the realm of, you know, like philosophy and all of like the ethics sometimes. And it depends. There's so much that involves a why. Like, doesn't have to do with anything that's specifically scientific. It can dwell from everything else.
Absolutely. You're totally right. Absolutely. You can inject your own, you can very much easily inject your own bias into a why question. And that's something I spotted with a lot of what I was looking at. Because a lot of this research that has been done on Western populations. Obviously, this is... You're going to see this. It's going to be slightly different for the study we're going to be talking about today when we get to it. But a lot of the study on beards has been done on Western populations, which obviously hair type and beard types are very different between sort of people in the West,
say
Europeans and North Americans, compared to, say, Native Asian. Americans and in Asia, like, you know, sort of the Middle East, Africa.
Yeah.
Lots of different hair types. You've got very thick, you could have very thick curly beards in sort of the Middle East and in Africa, but in say like Native Americans and I think East Asians and even Europeans, there is less facial hair or even like, you know, less thick facial hair. Mm-hmm. Right, so there's a lot of variation there. And yeah, these kind of why questions about evolution, particularly about humans, I think especially with humans, are so susceptible to just that little bit of unconscious bias in there. Just like, oh, why did this evolve? Well, we think this about religion, we think this about all these things, and it's so easy to inject that. I mean, what was we were talking about at the end?
We were talking about Ian's paper, which is the sex thing.
Yeah. And so you should go back and listen to that episode if you'd like. It's a great one. But what Ian said last week, what they said was that essentially, a lot of research on sex was initially done to push no sex before marriage and to sort of push that whole ideal.
Of course.
There was a lot of bias in it. Yeah. And so sex research initially began as trying to stop people from having sex. And so that's what I mean. When we look into sort of this research on humans and a lot of human behavior and even human evolution, I think it's very, very easy to just pop some bias in there. And sometimes it's very obvious. And other times it's a little bit more... I guess insidious. It's a little bit harder to notice.
I think now you really made me think about it, because you actually talked about the fact that why isn't necessarily something that you can actually explain in evolution. And it made me think about this now in terms of like, why is it that, for example, if I'm not wrong, I don't know if I'm wrong, but like I think Asian people in terms of like China, Japan struggle to grow a beard in terms of like, you know, like there's less people that grow a very thick beard in those countries compared to, you know, like, yeah, Middle East or anything like Africa. And I was wondering, like, why would that be? Like, why is it that, like, different kind of, like, different areas of the world have different sort of, like, facial hair dynamics? I'm like...
I have honestly no idea. I think... Okay, how about this? I'll give you some stuff that I do know about differences between sort of different... I'm going to say races and ethnicities, even though, like... as we've spoken about on the podcast before, race is like a sort of messy concept that isn't super scientific or biologically sort of relevant. But yeah, so let's say different populations in different areas of the world, right? There are reasons, obviously, for there being some sort of phenotypic differences, as in differences in not just their genes, but how those genes are expressed, what they look like, essentially, right? So skin color, for example, varies generally because of sunlight. So you go farther north, there is less sunlight, and you need to get it, like, you know, and you get vitamin D from sunlight. So you want to get as much of that sort of UV radiation into your body as possible. I think it's UV radiation. You want to get as much of that sort of sunlight into your body as possible, lighter skin, helps you do that. In dark, in hotter areas, you want darker skin because the melanin protects your, basically sort of protects your skin from cancer, essentially, you know, to put it very simply, right? So that's why those changes exist. Mm-hmm. And then I can't quite remember, but I remember reading the differences. There are obviously differences in hair type. So people from sort of African populations tend to have thicker, curlier, dark hair. Whereas people from more European populations, you know, moving up to sort of north, have much thinner, lighter, fairer hair. And off the top of my head, I can't quite remember the reason that was proposed for that. I think it's probably some. I think it was something to do with the heat and sunlight, maybe.
Oh, probably protecting the scalp and protecting the brain. That could be part of it from the sun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was to do with protecting the scalp and the brain. I think it was. Yeah. I think it might have been something to do with it being that one hair type being better at sort of. It's keeping heat out or like letting sweat sort of evaporate off. I can't quite remember off the top of my head.
It might have to do with the same thing. You know, like how sometimes you see people in the desert, well, a lot of the time they are wearing loads of clothes and are like really fully covered just because it apparently protects you from the heat, even though like you're technically still like producing a lot of heat yourself. It might be a very similar thing in terms of the hair. It's just like a more coarse, sort of like thick hair probably firstly protects you from the straight strength of the sun from like heat stroke and stuff like that. And it might be that as well, like protects you from your shedding your own heat and things like that.
Sure, absolutely. And that's it's so hard to, and you can, this is what I found really interesting, that you can give this explanation that sounds like super correct. It's a hypothesis,
but you know.
Well, yeah, no, but it's very good. It's a very like sort of astute, good idea, looking at what you know and saying, oh, maybe it's this. You've given a great hypothesis. Someone else could come along and give a completely different hypothesis that is equally as good. And it's very difficult there because we've got two great hypotheses, but which one is it, right? And when that's the issue with these why questions, that when we're looking at it, it's like, There's a lot of answers to a why, and a lot of those answers could be equally as sort of could seem equally as valid until we look at more information, right? And until we dig in and actually have to sort of disprove some of these answers that we've got to this why question. So
a why question like almost just asks for a story. It almost asks you to like predict the rest of the story. It implies there's like intention there. And you have to infer that intention. Well, obviously there's no intention because evolution doesn't intend anything. It just happens, I guess.
Yeah.
You personify evolution as if it had a will of its own, while actually it's just a bunch of things that scientifically end up sort of like progressing in a certain way. Yeah. And we human like to find explanations for all sorts of things, including evolution, and be like, yeah, but why does this happen? Why are we alive? Why are we like this? And sometimes there are certain things that, there is no reason, there is no why, because, or anything. It just is. It's just a mind-blowing concept that we can't accept.
Yeah.
Yeah, genuinely. No Luke here, and we've already gotten to...
I tried to channel my inner Luke.
I was going to say, Jeff, you've been listening to this podcast for a while.
I know what Luke would say.
What would Luke say? WWLS.
What would Luke say?
Yeah, someone get that tattooed. Or maybe...
There you go.
Skiggy's merch? Huh?
Ooh.
That's what I call Sci Guys, and I've never said it on the pod, but I 100% call it that to myself all the time.
Skiggy.
I say Skiggies, yeah.
I love it. Oh my god, it sounds so Skiggy.
Like, you know, I was like hey, what are you doing today? Oh, I just got Skiggies. You know, a little bit of Skiggies, yeah.
The new video series, what would Luke say? just a question, and then what would Luke say?
That's just asking Luke a question, then letting him talk until the camera runs out of battery.
No, yeah, we have to guess what Luke would say, and then we have to see what Luke actually says.
No, I think it could be done.
It could be done.
I think we're quite good at it, though. Yeah. I think we're like, between us, we're quite good at guessing what Luke would say now.
Yeah,
because like I feel like there's this thing with, you know, people that have, you know, friends of Luke, FOL. You know, like POC, FOL.
We have so many terms for Luke. We have
POC and FOL. How did you put those two next to each other?
You can see up on the wall there. Our Sci Guys calendar is listed as AL 26AL, and that's because it's 26 after Luke, after Luke's birth.
So as you can see, it says 27AL.
This almost destroyed calendar.
And on the back, see you next year, 28AL.
So New Year's Day is actually the 6th of April, And that's because it's Luke's birthday.
On which day you say happy new Luke?
Yes.
Yeah. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
It is the ad bell.
Support for Sci Guys is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers you the precision engineered tools for your family jewels.
And they just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across Europe.
You heard that right, the 4.0.
Did I hear that right?
You did!
Yay! My hearing works.
Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you.
20% off and free shipping when you use the code SciGuys at manscaped.com.
Over 4 million men. That means probably significantly more than 4 million balls are trusted by Manscaped.
Luke, you've got your trimmer here. I don't know why you brought it to my home.
So I could do this.
Mine is actually downstairs because...
I would hope so.
This is one of my favorite parts when I was using it, is that... It's got a little LED.
Light up the balls.
Yeah, which is great,
so
because the lighting in my bathroom, it's selfie solid. But
underneath you, the lighting isn't quite as good.
Because of my hefty sack, it's always getting in the way. And if our glowing review was not enough to convince you, don't forget, you're getting 20% off with free shipping when you use the code SciGuys at manscaped.com. That is 20% off and free shipping using the code SciGuys at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Bringing it back to beards, so what we've kind of been talking about is essentially the fact that why questions are really hard to answer, because they can be quite broad. And we've got a lot of hypotheses for the why of beards. We've spoken about some of them. So there's the idea that it might be because, you know, females find it more attractive, because it can, you know, that sort of mating thing. If a female sees a male with a beard, she's like, oh boy. That more sexy. But actually, when we've done studies on this, women nowadays tend not to find beards all that attractive. Women seem to prefer men without beards.
Really?
This is what I'm saying. A lot of this research, I think, has been done in the West, so that might be a cultural thing.
Right.
There might be differences there based on that.
It's so fashionable now in the West to have a beard.
These might be old studies as well. This is what I'm taking from. This is kind of old data as well. So, and that's the thing. Even then, it can kind of if it fluctuates between populations and it fluctuates between time periods.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more hard to sort of nail that one down. So another idea, you know, as I've said, is to sort of show more masculinity to other men, but then the difficulty with that one is that testosterone levels don't sort of it's not a completely one-to-one with beard fullness, right? Or beard growth. If you've got a really high testosterone levels, that doesn't necessarily mean you're gonna have a really good beard. There are a few more ideas. The last one that I'm gonna mention, the one that this sort of study is on, is about protecting your face. I think you mentioned that actually, Ellie. So there is the idea that a beard exists only in males because males were more likely to fight, and the way that humans fight is by balling their hand up into a fist and just full on punching someone in the face, right? Yeah. Just socking someone in the jaw. And your jawbone is, you know, it's really important. So the thing is here that if someone punches you in the jaw, right? That can break or fracture your jawbone. And actually, this is consistent with what we see. Like, jawbones are... there are a lot of sort of jaw injuries. It's a very sort of... it's one of the most commonly fractured facial bones in sort of interpersonal violence. That's a direct quote from the article.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, you know, if
and you
someone's...
needed to eat, you needed to speak,
exactly.
Communicate. Yeah, yeah.
Now, nowadays, obviously, modern medicine, broken jaw, you can survive.
Get a new one.
But... way back when, you know, Homo sapiens were evolving, right? Not say that we're not evolving now. Get out the comments. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear actuallys. Way back when...
I don't think I'm evolving.
Honestly, I think you're devolving.
Yeah.
Jamp heard devolution and did not understand what
it's not that the only way for Jamp to check if he's evolving is looking at his hands. And he's like, nah, not happening yet.
No.
So you know, way back when the beards were sort of becoming a thing, evolutionarily speaking, we didn't have modern medicine. And obviously a broken jaw, as you said, you needed to eat, speak, communicate, all of these things. A broken jaw could be a very serious injury.
That's pretty damning.
Yeah, we don't think about that now. You think, oh, a broken jaw, like, oh, he broke his jaw. That's a bit funny. He's, you know, it's a bit messed up, but it's nothing too serious. But no, a broken jaw could end you, right? And obviously that means that people that were able to better protect their jaws, specifically males that were better able to protect their jaws, probably had a better chance of passing on their genes. So that's where that kind of idea comes from. The hypothesis is that, and I'll read this directly from the article, that beards protect the skin and bones of the face when human males fight by absorbing and dispersing the energy of a blunt impact.
Ah. Yeah, actually, I would have never, like, because I always imagine it now, it's probably an attempt to protect your face, but like, if I have to think about it, if I were to get a punch, I mean, I've never gotten punched in the jaw, but you know, I think if it was protected by a beard, I don't know how much of a difference it would actually make.
The thing, you gotta bear in mind, it doesn't need to make a huge difference to be
like, you know, something that like your genetics kind of like brings on in terms of like, but if I can protect you a bit, I'll do it, sort of thing.
It all it needs to do is just enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If it just is, it gives you that, if it gives you the slightest edge on other males, and you're more able to win, just like that slight edge to be able to win more fights and, you know, have your jaw break less, jaw fracture less, for example, and, you know, pass on your genes more, then that's gonna sort of come through, right?
They could pull it though. That's another thing. They could pull it.
I
would pull someone's beard.
I'm gonna
be
honest.
Like hell.
Yeah, but in a fight with someone
else
with a beard,
presumably has a beard.
It's really hard to. It's hard to grab at a beard.
A long beard, you reckon?
No, but like you wouldn't like. I mean, we're not necessarily talking like super long beards,
okay,
right?
Okay.
But like, I mean, a long beard. Yeah, you could grab that. But like, if they've got a long beard, they're probably gonna have long hair.
I feel like you're gonna be more focused on their hands, probably. Yeah.
You grab someone's beard, ow, that pull, you've got to get in close. One of your hands is taken up. You don't have a defense, and someone else, and that person's got two hands.
They can still swing.
If someone was to try
see,
and
I've
pull,
never been in a fight, and that shows.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well if someone's going to try and pull a beard, for me, that's thumbs in the eyes.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know? Yeah, true, yeah.
Yeah. Not that I've ever been in a fight, but you know.
Sounds just, like you have.
Yeah, I would just scream.
Of course you would. Someone just pulls this. Ouch.
tiny scream.
So that's kind of what they're studying. The title of the study, I'll give you this. It's Impact Protection Potential of Mammalian Hair, Testing the Pugilism Hypothesis for the Evolution of Human Facial Hair. There's a word in there that you don't know.
There's a lot of words I don't know in that title.
You know all these words. So impact protection potential of mammalian hair. So
impact protection potential?
Yeah. So how likely is mammalian hair?
Yeah, yeah, no, I was trying to understand the words. Impact protection potential?
Yeah. Potential.
Potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of mammalian hair.
Of mammalian hair.
Yeah, okay. So how likely is the hair of mammals, like us, you know, how likely is that to protect from impact?
Yeah.
You know? And then testing the pugilism hypothesis for the evolution of human facial hair. Pugilism just means boxing. So pugilism is boxing.
Oh,
yeah, or to do with boxing. Good. Yeah, or pugilists to do with boxing. And hypothesis, you know what that means? For the evolution of human facial hair. Yeah, boxing.
Oh my God.
Think about it, because boxing is punching people in the face. So that's the primary mode of combat between human males.
I just realized some helmets have got the things over here, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
To protect you from your jaw.
I mean, obviously you want to protect your brain, right? That's
yeah,
what
yeah,
a lot
but it
of
normally
them, yeah.
comes down over here, doesn't it? Like a beard.
Yeah. Exactly.
Considering it.
Yeah. So this was done, this was published in Integrative Organismal Biology in 2020. It was funded by the National Science Foundation grant, and it also won an Ig Nobel Prize as well. Do you want to explain what an Ig Nobel Prize is?
So the Ig Nobel Prize goes to, now I hope I get this right because it's been a while since we've talked about it. The Ig Nobel Prizes are, like the Nobel Prizes, they award awards, Ig Nobels, to science achievements that are slightly weird. As in, like, they are weird on the surface, but they have, like, actual scientific significance underneath.
Oh, I love that.
So, like, what would be an example? I've forgotten.
So the idea is, the sort of phrase is, you know, they laugh, then they make you think.
Yeah.
So a classic one was seeing if human feces could be fashioned into a knife. When frozen, which we did, I think, a bonus episode on.
We did, yeah.
Another one,
the episode's
was
called like the poo knife or something.
Yeah.
True.
Oh no, it's the
poop
it's the
knife.
It's the no, we can't knife. Say it on the podcast. It's got a swear in it.
Oh, is it?
It's the sweariest knife in the world.
Yes. Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sweariest.
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 Cussiest knife in the world.
The poopiest knife in the world.
There we go. So there's that. There's also one about levitating frogs, which we did an episode on as well.
One of the things we talk about
at the start of the podcast, like way back when it began. Mm-hmm. So the Ig Nobel Prize is kind of very Sci Guys of it. It's sort of like it's essentially, yeah, anything that makes you sort of laugh and then think a little bit
weird
more.
But useful achievement.
Yeah,
actually, yeah, useful science. Yeah.
Well, they don't need to be necessarily super useful, but just interesting in some way,
right?
You know.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So he won an Ig Nobel Prize, my question for you both is, what do you think the results will be? And also, how do you think they tested it? So bear in mind, what they're looking at generally is how well mammalian hair protects from blunt force impact. Mm-hmm. So, one, how do you think they tested it? And two, what do you think the results are going to be? Or actually, swap those around. One, what do you think the results are going to be? Two, how do you think they tested it?
I would probably put some, I think the word in English is electrons, like the ones that you put on the brain, mm-hmm. To measure maybe brain wavelength, mm-hmm. and check the areas that experience pain, how high the pain is, just doing some scans, mm-hmm. I reckon I would do, if I had to like measure. You know, I don't know how good it is, like someone volunteering to be punched.
Okay, so
and like
they,
actually,
yeah.
like
did they just punch a bunch of guys in the face?
So Ellie's is punching someone in the face. What?
I mean, that's
I don't think the beard is going to do too much to protect the face, but I reckon they hit a bunch of people in the face.
Okay, well, I'm really glad that my next segment is the statement on human and animal rights, because this research did not involve human or animal subjects. You two are barbaric.
Oh,
they did it to rats.
No, human or animal. It didn't involve human rats or animals.
Plants.
No, why would they punch plants?
Like a tree.
They don't grow beards.
Neither do rats.
Yeah, true.
Oh.
True.
Okay, so.
Well, you could argue.
No, you could not argue.
Their
rats do not grow beards. Whiskers, maybe, but beards, no. So.
What if a beard is kind of like whiskers?
It isn't. Humans are one of the only mammals, one of the only mammals, if not the only mammals that don't have... Oh, sorry. Primates are pretty much the only mammals that don't have some form of whiskers. Yeah. I think dolphins also don't, but I think they grow them and then they fall off or something.
That's don't quote sad. Okay.
I'm guessing they built model human beings, fake human beings, put beards on them, and then some didn't have beards, and then they just whacked them.
Yes.
With some kind of measuring instrument.
Okay. Yes. Dear God.
A thermometer.
Yeah.
Like that, but for impact. So,
and
wow.
A seismometer.
What's the one for earthquakes?
No, it wasn't that. I'll explain what it is.
A tape measure. How disjointed was the jaw afterwards?
Sorry, Jeff, just your explanation of it is honestly technically correct.
Thank you.
But just...
I'll take it.
What?
No, Jamp's explanation of, you know, building a fake
just some
human.
Fake people put some beards on and whack them.
Oh, I thought they'd tape measure it to the jaw.
That's
definitely wrong.
So they made human bone, and I'll quote the article on you here. So we've got Jamp's explanation
Thank you.
Making a fake person and just whacking it.
Sex doll, you know. That's
which,
what it is.
They could have used sex dolls.
They didn't use sex dolls. Okay, the fake human was fake human tissue, and it looked nothing like humans.
Human tissue?
Okay, I'll explain. So... human bone tissue was modeled using a short fiber epoxy composite bone analog, which has material properties similar to human cortical bone. Essentially, what this means is they made fake bone from epoxy. It's not real bone.
Okay.
It just has similar properties in that it will break like bone. It'll absorb It'll absorb energy in similar ways to bone does. And obviously, they could not get a fully bearded skin sample from a cadaver, it says in the paper, specifically, because it was not practical to obtain fully bearded skin samples from human cadavers, and loose human hair was anticipated to not distribute the force of impact the way in-situ hair may, we used skin samples from domestic sheep purchased from a local slaughterhouse. So,
I don't think beard and wool kind of do the same thing.
Well, I'll get to it, but essentially what they did was they chose a specific
segment of it.
I would trust wool more than a beard.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You say this, but so the very next sentence in the article is actually sheep fleece is not a perfect analogy for the hair of human beards. But then they go on to explain why they decided to use it. Basically, the follicles of sheep fleece, they're much smaller than human beard hair follicles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more densely packed they're more densely packed on the sort of skin. But the follicles of human beards have are basically sort of longer and essentially it just evened out to being sort of somewhat comparable, right?
Okay.
Right. In terms of the hair there, it worked out to be somewhat comparable.
I trust that they did the math.
Right?
Yeah, because yeah. I would have gone for any other animal. I wouldn't have thought it was sheep.
It would be the last thing I choose.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. It says, consequently, the volume of follicles in our fleece samples did approximate the volume of full beards, which is unlikely to be true for the pelts of most other species. Essentially, the number of sort of follicles and hair and all that is more. It's quite close to human beards, more so at least than the sort of fur of other animals. Yeah.
Okay.
So they did choose something that was, you know, as analogous as they could get.
Okay.
And again, this is just, it's a first sort of study. They used 20 samples of each. So they had furred, sheared, and plucked. I'm sure you could guess which these are. So they cut the bone analog into small rectangles, and then they cut the skin samples to the same size. And they also soaked the skin samples in saline, which is just a salt water solution, so they could be all nice and wet, like living skin and tissue is.
True.
Because dry tissue would act differently.
Yeah.
And so the sheared, plucked, and furred. Sheared, they were trimmed with manual sheep shears to 0.5 centimeters. So the sort of hair on them was 0.5 centimeters. And then that was basically to test whether the hair roots influenced the results. So not just the sort of, not the full beard, but the roots of the hair. And then they had plucked, and that pulled out the roots. So the plucked pulled out the roots of the hair, so it was just bare. And then the furred samples had about 8 centimeters of hair on them. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's about just under a third of your sort of standard ruler. Yeah.
Yeah.
In length of hair. Those essentially they tried to do this to sort of have a similar idea of, like, it's basically be similar to human beards, right? That was the idea, that they chose these three different kinds of sample to be similar to human beards. Mm-hmm. So of these sheared, plucked, and furred, they had 20 of each. So they tested them 20 times. Then they did an impact drop test, and I've got an image here for you.
Oh.
Essentially, what this was a blunt striker, which is about 3 centimeters in diameter, and it weighs about just under 5 kilograms, 4.7 kilograms, and it sort of sat at a height above the material. I think the height was about 7.4 centimeters. I think that's off the top of my head. It doesn't hugely matter what the exact height was, but it was 7.4 centimeters. They did a bunch of tests to see where the best placement for it was. They decided 7.4. So they've got this sort of little mass sitting 7.4 centimeters above, okay. And they just... they drop it down to hit the sort of the fur bone sample sort of thing, and they've got a velocity detector to measure the velocity of the striker at impact. So it's not like the sort of average, it's the instantaneous velocity they measure. So they measured the velocity of the striker and they basically measured all of this sort of stuff so they could figure out what the force was and how long the force was being applied, sort of on the sample was, right? So here is the image. This is what it looked like.
Right.
So you've got the striker there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So
different than I imagined.
If you're listening, it's basically kind of like a rod held above a sample of just some sheep's fleece.
I mean, go to
on
YouTube.
Top of a square.
If you're listening, go to YouTube. I'll put the image on screen.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it was set up.
Very different from my idea of like punching guys in the face.
Yeah. I mean, a little, maybe a little more ethically sound, I think, than your ideas.
I even imagined like human dummies with like bones built into them.
Literally, yeah. And
that's
yeah.
what I imagined.
I feel like you're going like this is something science is often, we use analogs when we can't do something literally, and maybe we could work our way up to doing something more literally, but generally the idea is it's probably best to test this out on this first, right?
Maybe
before we start punching people.
Yeah, before we start asking for consent, right? Can we hit you in the face?
Yeah, you know, oh, can we hit you in the face? Can we build a lifelike human replica with human bones inside and punch it a lot? Can we do that? you know, there's a cost associated with one of them and a sort of moral cost associated with the other.
We go through so many moral costs throughout the day. I'm sure that one more isn't a problem.
I say that as though they did not take a dead sheep and use its skin.
Literally.
And fleece. So, you know, I guess there's moral costs for everything.
We had an issue with morals, so we decided to go to the slaughterhouse. And
I just realised that earlier I said that all of the Psy guys were vegan, and I forgot that you were also vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's vegan. You got to be vegan to come on.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But only for the time you're on the podcast.
Okay.
Basically, no eating meat on the podcast, but off pod, you can do what you like.
That's fine. Temporarily vegan.
Yeah, temporarily vegan.
But we're all permanently vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we look at the results? What do you think the results are going to be? You've both said that you don't think it's going to work.
I can't imagine it providing much protection.
It probably does provide, you know, depending on thickness, like if it's as thick as it looked in that picture, some sort of, you know, bounds, sort of like, you know, protections. It probably would, just because there is a surface of some sort between whatever is hitting you and the jaw. But I can't think it being that. I love that you're already doing this because I'm wrong. I can't imagine it would be that much of a protection.
The furred samples provided greater protection against impact than did the plucked or sheared samples.
Yeah, because it's full of fluff.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, again, they did this as a sort of to be as analogous as possible to beard hair. And when you think about it, like a thick beard, it's not too dissimilar from the image that we saw, right?
I guess.
No, it's like as if I punched you through your hair and I punched you through your jaw, I'm sure that like the pain would be stronger in your jaw because of your hair protection.
Yeah, your hair will slow something. It does. Well, it will slow some things down. So what they had the recordings of the force and the energy absorbed for all of the different samples. And if you look at the data, the average peak force was lower, and the energy absorbed was higher. And the time to peak force and energy absorbed was greater in the furred samples than in the other two. So essentially what that means is that the peak force that hit the sort of bone was lower, which means that something else was basically taking some of the force, the hair, presumably. Okay. And the peak energy absorbed was higher. So essentially the amount of energy that the thing is absorbing by hitting it is higher because the hair is also absorbing some of the energy.
It's probably less linear as well as a hit, because obviously the hair have got like a different texture, different, like one is a bit more up than the other one's a bit more down. So like when you hit something, you don't hit it linearly. It's not like a flat surface. It's different. So like the force probably like spreads in different ways.
Exactly. So essentially what this means is that the entire sample could take more force before the bone broke. And that was the point that they were basically seeing, how much can we do before this bone breaks? Or this sort of, you know, fake bone fractures, breaks, chips off, that sort of thing. And yeah, the furred samples actually did take a bit more force.
Wow. And significant enough, I assume.
Yeah, no. So I think it was.
So it's kind of like the beard's kind of like a dampener.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, like a cushion. Kind of like how this mic muff works.
What's the word for that thing that you have, for example, on your bike, that like this? Those are the suspensions. When you like slam onto something, but it kind of like bounces off.
Well, that'll be the suspension?
Is it called? Is it suspension? Then?
Yeah, oh, okay. That sounds like suspension. Yeah.
It works as kind of like one.
So kind of like how this mic muff works. There's like, it's like a little foam dampener for sound. If I like talk directly into the microphone, when I say the p,
whereas if
sounds,
I go p, 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 p,
it's not as harsh. Because there's like a little filter. It doesn't seem like much, but it makes a big difference.
And even, so if we do a little tap test, so if you're listening or watching, what we're doing is Jamp's mic has no sort of muff protector on it, which is this big foam
thing. It's exposed. It's shaved, you could say.
Exactly. And mine has protection. So that was Jamp tapping, and here's me. You can hear the difference in sound.
Yeah.
There's a little bit differences there.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a sort of difference in force being applied to the microphone.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Again. It's for like the harsh.
It's making a difference.
It's for the harsh like sounds with our mouths, where we push out a lot of air. Like the word push pushes out a lot of air, and you can hear that. But for you, it's not as
it's less, bad. And that little bit does that little bit of protection. Yeah. So the difference is actually so the differences in peak energy between the furred and sheared got to, I think, about 30% difference and a 36% difference between the furred and plucked. And then there was a, and that was the peak energy, as in the peak energy absorbed, which is like pretty big. A 36% difference and a 31% difference. It's a lot of difference. And the peak force as well. There was a 15.6% difference between the furred versus the plucked, and a 12.79% difference between the furred versus the sheared. And also, when you look at it, there is a lot of difference in between the number of samples that actually failed, as in the number of samples that sort of like broke. So I think 0.4, basically 45%, I think, of the furred samples broke, whereas almost all of the other two broke. So I think 95% of the sheared, and I think about 100% of the plucked broke. Or failed, yeah. Whereas 45% of the furred did.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, so this sort of fur on there, this sort of hair, did actually confer some advantage to a force being applied. It caused less breakage of that bone, or that bone analog rather.
But it's quite a strong force though. It's quite impressive that thin layer of hair. I mean, it is quite thick, but also when you think about it, like how strong that. Compared to how strong the force is, it is rather
absolutely
thin. But
I mean, and
it seems to do a lot.
Yeah, and it does enough. I think is the key there, right? It doesn't need to do a whole lot. If it takes just that little bit away, and it's just that little bit less, force.
Yeah.
It's enough to maybe tip the scales and not actually damage the bone too much, right? Which is obviously useful if you're getting in a lot of fights. Just that little added bit of padding could be really useful. In the same sense that. This is it's a very thin sort of, it's not very much foam there on these microphones, but it's just enough to create enough of a difference. Obviously, I could go...
go really hard.
And go really hard.
And it does a job, as Evolution does.
Exactly, you know? And if you... So that's basically the results of the study there. That there is sort of like a fair difference between these. I think nearly 30% more energy was absorbed in the furred samples compared to the sheared and plucked, which is pretty insane. And so essentially what they're saying to this, that if the same is true, and I'll read this directly from the article, if the same is true for human facial hair, then having a full beard may help protect vulnerable regions of the facial skeleton from damaging strikes, such as the jaw. Presumably, full beards also reduce injury, laceration, and contusion to the skin and muscle of the face. What that means is you're less likely to get sort of cuts and bruises, and just injured on your sort of in your muscles and skin if the beard is there, because, you know, obviously... That's what's hurting you. The impact of the force there, obviously those sort of protective functions of that hair there, could then make you better at sort of combat, or more able to sort of engage in combat, which could then mean you're more able to pass on those genes, which is why perhaps beards could be seen as more masculine, and sort of be associated with, it says here, be associated with high masculinity, social dominance, and behavioral aggressiveness, because it could be a true indicator of the level of invulnerability to facial injury. Right, so that's the idea there. Because while we don't see testosterone levels necessarily correlate hugely, cleanly with sort of beard growth, or sort of beard thickness and beard health and all that sort of stuff, if it's a case of actually invulnerability to facial injury correlating with the sort of fullness of a beard, that could be the case for it there. That is kind of most of it there. The issue here is that obviously what they've said as well. So we're looking at the discussion now. It's what I kind of mentioned earlier, that this could only be true for some populations and not for others. Obviously, because there's great variation in types of beard,
texture, and everything. Thickness. Yeah,
yeah, and it says here it's unknown why human populations vary in their developed facial hair. So we were talking earlier about why that might be. We I think we might know why there's a difference in sort of hair on the head, the different types of hair, but the different sort of levels of facial hair, we're not necessarily sure why that might be. And there's also another study I want to mention, and they mention it in their discussion, because the results seem to conflict with a study that was done on MMA fighters to see whether having a beard basically how that affected wins and knockouts in MMA fights.
Interesting.
And in that study, beards didn't have an impact on wins and knockouts in those MMA fights. It basically compared rates of winning in 600 fights involving 395 fighters and found no evidence of a performance advantage provided by facial hair, and concluded that beards represent dishonest signals of formidability that may serve to curtail the escalation of intersexual conflict through intimidation rather than providing advantages in direct combat. So what that paper was saying, the MMA paper, it was saying essentially that beards don't have any, they don't give you any advantage in fights. So what they must be for is to just show, sort of give the appearance of being better, you know, like false flag, like a fake, I'm big and strong, you should be scared of me. And that's where the sort of benefit comes in.
It's like the illusion of protection, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But the results of this study don't necessarily conflict all that much with the results of the other study because they're both testing different things.
Yeah.
MMA fights are a little bit more complex than simply just looking at sort of breaking of bones in the face, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just... in my head, though, it proved the complete opposite. It proved that there is a discrepancy in the study in terms of, like, yes, of course, an MMA fight is different from, like, just a rod of metal hitting sheepskin. But I think there's, you know, it proves that that actually isn't the case. You know, as you said, like, it's fake. It's not something that actually provides protection. It's just sort of like an illusion of it.
But it didn't prove anything. So the point is that the MMA... So looking at the MMA fighters... they were only looking at wins and sort of decided wins and knockouts. They weren't, so a knockout doesn't necessarily have to do with, a knockout doesn't necessarily have to do with a broken jawbone.
The jaw, yeah.
Exactly.
True.
And also,
sort of like the actual head.
Exactly.
Moving and up, yeah.
A decided win
there's
doesn't
so many factors, yeah.
Exactly. So they both could absolutely be true, right? A beard could, maybe, a beard will probably not protect you from a knockout. But a beard could protect you from a broken jaw, right?
True, yeah.
And that's basically what this is saying, is that the MMA study, I'll read out from you know, the paper that we've been reading. Although this is not the result we would have predicted based on our observation that thick hair reduces peak impact force and energy applied to the structure beneath the hair, the metric used in their study, number of wins by knockout or technical knockout, is not a direct measure of the rate of those injuries that may be reduced by full beards. Our results provide no evidence that beards provide protection against being knocked out. Rather, our results are presumed to be the most relevant to skin lacerations and facial bone fractures. And actually, in the MMA paper, what they said was that beards, the sort of finding that they had, that beards don't give a performance advantage, it might be more relevant to professional fighters than non-professionals. Mm-hmm. And obviously, evolutionarily speaking, there were no MMA fighters, right?
No.
It's like MMA, like, they are trained to fight in that particular way, but if Jampa and I got into a scrap, for example, and I'm socking Jampa in the jaw, I'm not doing it like an MMA fighter.
No.
You know,
I'm doing it out of instinct.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm gonna go straight there. And I, you know, a beard could protect more against that. So this is that kind of thing where I just want to quickly touch on the idea that even if results seem to be sort of conflict with each other or disprove each other, that might not be the case. You've got to be sort of, we've got to look at exactly what is being measured, mm-hmm. because sometimes it paints a very different picture. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that could also be said in terms of, like, I'm sure that there is another actual reason for it, but the fact that we grow pubic hair, you know, to protect our genitalia, but also, like, that still does not explain why we have hair under the armpit. So I don't know about
that. I think hair under the armpit is, it gives more space for it's better for sweat control.
You reckon for smell, maybe sweat?
I think it was, I say sweat control, I think that what I read was, and again, take this with a grain of salt, I think what I read was that apparently it gives more surface area for the sweat to evaporate from, and the evaporation of the sweat is what allows the smell to spread, and obviously the smell is kind of a sort of
territory,
pheromones, yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, so I think I read that somewhere. Again, that take it with a massive grain of salt, because I cannot, like, don't even think of this as true. Look into, this is me saying, whenever I say take it with a grain of salt, what I mean is look into this and check if I'm right or wrong, because I cannot remember.
Yeah.
But I remember reading that somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that is it. That's the episode for today. That is the science of beards, the why... of beards. What do
the
you all
think?
The
power of beards.
Power of beards, exactly. Yeah.
I want a beard now.
Distribution. Yeah.
Potentially protect your face. I mean, I would, you know, get a mask, protect me from illness, get a beard, protect me from punches. I am invulnerable.
I will live a beard and a mask.
I cannot be harmed. Simply cannot be harmed.
I'm going to enter an MMA tournament. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. And I am not going into an MMA anywhere but there.
No.
Only I will only fight unprofessionals. Yeah?
Yeah. True. I'm going to become a professional so you don't fight me.
You'd have to become a professional first. Obviously, the takeaway from this is not that beards evolved specifically to protect the face. The takeaway from this is that, beards may have evolved. Or there appears to be some evidence, if we're
maybe
being
one of the reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to be more specific, your takeaway from this should be there appears to be some preliminary evidence to suggest that facial hair can protect the facial bones from fracture when being punched. Right?
But just from fracture.
Yeah. Well, fracture, skin
dislocation.
Yeah. That's your takeaway. Very specific. Yeah. Right, because I see this all the time. Articles would be like, beards are made to protect you from being punched, and that's why they're there. They're to stop you from being hit. You're very much extending the results of this study to say something that they're not saying. But that is it. That is the episode for this week. Thank you very much for joining us, Ellie.
Oh, no worries. It was actually really fun. I love this conversation. Well, so it was really cool. Even though I don't have a beard, I was like, oh, I want to know this. Yeah.
I learned so much about beards. I might actually grow one now.
Please do. Yeah. Please do.
No.
So, why don't we move on to the quickfire quiz?
Dun, 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 dun. Easiest one ever. Beard edition.
Yeah. So, Ellie, I will explain the rules of the quickfire quiz to you.
Go.
As I always, always do. So, I will ask one question between the two of you. The first person to answer the question correctly after I've finished asking the question wins. What do they win, champ?
Nothing.
You're gosh darn right.
Yeah.
Now, usually I'd ask Luke to give me his buzzer first, but since he's not here, I'll ask champ. Yep, what's your buzzer?
Scratchy beard.
Oh, awful. Awful. I hate it. Ellie, what's your buzzer?
Spaghetti.
I love it.
Amazing. Fantastic.
So, much easier than having to do all of that.
I know. I usually go for a mouth sound, but I'm feeling spicy.
I don't like that you say a mouth sound because it is true, but
it is a mouth sound.
It is. I know, but I don't like words.
I could say word.
I don't like words being described
as
that.
The spicy version of word is mouth sound.
Yeah, but a word can be on a page. So, that's not the point. That's not the point. We're getting off track. Let's get back on track. So don't forget, the rules are, I'm going to ask this one question. The first person to buzz in after I finish the question, because I need to finish the question, they get to answer. They get the answer right. They win. The question is, what does pugilism refer to?
Spaghetti. Boxing.
Ellie.
Boxing.
Well done. Ding, ding, ding. That is correct.
Ha!
Good
I remember
job.
Just after you buzzed.
Yeah, I laid up one real thick.
So I actually do win, in a way.
No.
You really don't.
You don't.
No, that's okay. Really not how
I'll
a quiz
give
works.
You, I'll give you that win.
Congratulations, Ellie. Here is your prize. A big old side guy's nothing. There you go. Enjoy that.
I'll always cherish it and feed him.
What are you doing to the nothing? You're harming the nothing.
This is not harm. This is love. Oh, okay. Thing that he probably hasn't had here.
No. We put the nothing in a box and... it's a nothing box. It's okay. Anyway, this is the end of the show. I don't know why we're spinning our wheels like this. Is there anything you want people to go and check out, Ellie?
They can check out my YouTube at Do You Know Ellie or my Twitter and Instagram and all of the other socials at Ellie Spiga.
Cool.
Which is really easy.
I think we'll have the YouTube linked in the description, won't we?
We absolutely will, yeah.
Fantastic. So head down there to check that out. I think that's it. Anything else anyone wants to say before we go?
Look.
Please feel better.
Oh, yeah. I hope you're doing okay, buddy.
He doesn't.
Maybe you should have grown a beard on your leg.
And with that, I think it's the end of the show. Before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons and thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday and why not leave us a nice wee comment. You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or you can join the community at our Discord and you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
What's wrong with that?
That feels so strange. Yeah. You can follow me at Not Corey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Ellie Spiga everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.